I want to get back to a place where moderates and liberals and progressives and conservatives can debate politics.
Yes. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters. Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime on the internet at WFPR.FM and in the local Franklin Mass FM radio dial. Yeah, that thing with the dials or the push button sets, 102.9. We're here in our glorious studio again today with Alex Ricklin. Alex, welcome. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, I focus on Franklin, and you've got an interesting challenge coming up. So this is going to give me a chance to explore and expand my boundaries a little bit.
Yeah, I'm looking at Franklin and a couple of other towns.
A couple of other towns, yes, because you're effectively trying to challenge in the primary on the Democratic side our Senator Markey, who has had some say too long experience, but he certainly had a long and good experience in the Senate for us.
Correct. I am running for U.S. Senate here in Massachusetts. I am challenging Senator Markey. I am running as a Democrat, so I am running in the primary. Senator Markey is up for re-election in 2026. And as you said, on Election Day, he will have served Massachusetts for 50 years as the longest-serving Democrat in Congress.
Sure. That is a long time. Some of our listeners, wait a minute, 50 years? Yes.
But that is not why I am running. I didn't get into this because he has been there for too long.
Mm-hmm.
I got into this race because I feel that the senator's actions have not matched his language over the last several months, dating back basically to Election Day.
Mm-hmm.
Markey and the rest of Democrats spent a whole year telling us that Donald Trump was an existential threat, and then Donald Trump won, and I don't see how Democrats in Congress are responding differently than they have to previous Republican administrations.
Right.
Senator Markey has been in Washington for six previous Republican administrations.
Sure.
And I don't see how he is using the power of the office differently than the other six times that he has been in the minority. But he escalated his language.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not alone in this criticism.
Right.
You know, you see the 50501 group, a nationwide protest movement,
mm-hmm,
that formed in weeks, days,
sure,
maybe,
yeah,
to have protests all over the country, hundreds of thousands of people, and is now a sustained organization getting people to take action and take to the streets quite literally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go to one of those protests and ask if they think Democrats' actions match their language.
Right.
Ask them if they're satisfied with how Democrats are responding to this administration. And I think you're going to get a pretty resounding no.
Yeah.
You know, there are podcasters talking about this. There are writers writing about this.
Mm-hmm.
People are calling for Democrats to change course.
Yes.
And generally speaking, there are flashes. There are moments.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, Democrats are pretty stubbornly sticking to the plan that they've come up with.
Kind of the party book, if you will, but there's divisions within that, and
yeah,
there hasn't been a coalescence around this is the direction we need to,
yeah,
go in, as I've understood from the listening and the reading, et cetera,
yeah,
and watching that I've been doing.
Yeah. I felt that we needed to open up another avenue in this push,
mm-hmm,
for change.
Right.
We need more. And since I started looking into this, and since I announced it's only gotten worse. There are American military personnel on city streets in our capital.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to underscore how terrible that is.
Right.
And where is the outrage from the opposition? Where are Democrats?
Mm-hmm. So that's where we are. Clearly, you've seen this develop, but going back a little bit in terms of, okay, what brings you to this moment where you now need to take action on the one hand, then what things in your background, your development,
mm-hmm.
do you think will help you go forward with readdressing the better language to go forward?
Sure. The moment for me of realization mm-hmm. that Democrats really aren't going to change
right.
was Kash Patel, the now FBI, the head of the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
He was, for the last several years, effectively, his job was basically QAnon influencer. And the week before, they just went about business as usual. They let Congress close on a Thursday. There was a bipartisan trip to Europe. They came back. I mean, no Democrats voted for him. Great, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But we're just going to go about business as usual when we're about to hand over one of the most important investigatory bodies
mm-hmm.
to a loyalist who has openly said that he is more interested in doing Trump's bidding than mm-hmm. investigating international terrorists
right.
in doing the job of the FBI.
Yeah.
That was the moment for me when I said, okay, this is the course that Democrats are taking.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get it.
Right.
And whether Markey is going along with Chuck Schumer's plans and, you know, privately seething, or he agrees with them, who's to say?
Yeah.
But you're a member of the U.S. Senate. If you disagree, say so.
Mm-hmm.
The stakes matter.
Yeah.
I've been around and attentive long enough to know that there's a lot of institutional discouragement
mm-hmm.
against primaries in the state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not necessarily officially, but
kind of the unwritten rule, et cetera. You bide your time, you pay your dues, et cetera. And that, in my perspective at least, it seemed to have worked for time, but clearly may not be working at this point.
Yeah. And so my supposition was that, you know, I had this moment where I realized we need a primary challenge.
Mm-hmm.
We have a senator who's supposed to be really a leader of the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Markey had been, for most of his career, one of the go-to figures who you would point to as
sure.
as a leader. Right?
Yep.
He's earned that reputation over time.
Yep.
I proudly voted for him last time around. I think that we got to a situation where we needed a primary challenge, and my guess was that one was not going to come.
Mm-hmm.
And that also we needed it now.
Mm-hmm.
We needed to start applying pressure right now.
Right.
We needed to, even if one was coming eventually,
mm-hmm.
we needed to be applying for that pressure and saying, you're not doing enough right now.
Right.
I reached out to anyone I could had connections to and mm-hmm. reached out to their connections and tried to find out what I could find out. Found out that my guess as to the state of the field was close enough to accurate.
Mm-hmm.
There was a piece that I was missing, but the piece that I was missing didn't change any of my calculations.
Right.
And so started figuring out how to do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something that you think needs to happen and you don't think anyone else is going to do it,
somebody's got to step up. And you decided to.
I didn't feel like I had a ton of choice. You know, I was in a situation in my life where as my family could manage mm-hmm. me doing this.
Sure.
And how many people around the state had recognized all of the parts. How many people had recognized
mm-hmm.
that a primary challenge, at least one with this message, was not coming.
Right.
That it should be starting now.
Mm-hmm.
If they'd recognized those pieces, were in a place in their life where they could afford to do it and mm-hmm. were willing to do it.
Sure. Yeah, because it will take some time.
takes a lot of time. And so, leads me here.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And I think thinking through kind of where you started from, to the extent that he has been in the role, and clearly he's got some experience, mm-hmm. he just, the message and his actions haven't been together, to the extent that you're on the record, you're starting now early enough, he may effectively start changing, which is part of the good stuff coming
sounds
from that
like
anyway.
A huge win.
Yeah.
Great.
Right. There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
Yep.
That's, where's the bad part of that question?
No, I don't see one.
I often am asked, you know, are you running to send a message or are you running because you think you can win?
Right.
And my answer is always, like, why can't it be both?
Sure.
You know, I think that we are in a moment where there is massive frustration and anger, not just at the Republican Party, but at the Democratic Party. You know,
yeah.
There was a poll recently that I think Democratic approval rating amongst Democrats
mm-hmm.
was, I think the number was 28%. It was below 30. Democrats aren't happy with Democrats. There is a frustration and an aptitude for a challenge like this one,
mm-hmm.
even from an unlikely candidate like
right.
myself,
yeah.
in a way that there isn't in most cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do believe that there is an appetite for a challenge like mine and a pathway.
Mm-hmm.
And running to try to seize that and make the most of that.
Mm-hmm.
But if along the way I can get one of the senators who, at least until a couple months ago, I would have described as among the best
mm-hmm.
to be better at his job, I don't see that as a bad.
No.
I see that as a pretty clear win. But also, I can't count on that.
No.
I can't count on someone else changing as the solution. You know, what are we now? 9 months in since Election Day?
Yeah.
And we haven't seen the change yet? I can't count on Markey or Schumer or anyone else changing course. I can't put my eggs in that basket. And I don't think Massachusetts Democrats at large, mm-hmm. our country, I don't think that we can afford to bank on that.
Right.
But if that's a side benefit of my running, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Your message in terms of initiating change, hopefully getting him to change, although you're not hoping for that. But if that happens, so be it. And that's good, as we've talked. But your message to the voters at large, what is that going to be to, because this platform, mm-hmm. using the podcast, the local radio, to help spread your word. So what are you going to be talking to that clearly differs from Senator Markey?
Sure. I think of it as there's a very clear priority in the while Republicans are in charge era, mm-hmm. and then there's a very clear priority in the post-Republicans once Democrats take back power era. As long as Trump and this destructive autocratic regime mm-hmm. is trying to undermine 250 years of American democracy, we need to recognize that threat for what it is mm-hmm. and use every possible tool available to pause, to delay, to obstruct, to get in the way. Every single appointment that he makes is one more person in an official government job doing his bidding, cutting funding for mm-hmm. schools, cutting research into cures for cancer, mm-hmm. Putting masks on and abducting sometimes literal citizens.
Correct.
We need to be doing everything we can to obstruct. And that's part of why I am running for Senate, is because senators have a lot more tools available to them than any other member in the minority party. Mm-hmm. A member of the House in the minority doesn't have nearly as many tools available to them as a member of the Senate does. And so that's why my frustration is so much more aimed at the Senate.
In this race.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll just take a moment to step back. So clearly in the American government structure, the House and Senate, there are clear delineations. House initiates budget items, but Senate is foreign policy and appointment approvals. Mm. Those at least are two of the easy talking points. And thereby within that is some of the tools you would have as a senator to take some action.
Exactly. And so, you know, use those tools available to you to slow things down, delay. Mm-hmm. And then once we get power back, and I do, you know, sometimes I talk to people who get really pessimistic mm-hmm. And say, you know, I don't think we're going to have elections. I understand where that pessimism is coming from.
Sure.
And you are right to be concerned, but we can't give away the game before they've taken it. We've got to operate on the assumption that we will still have elections and that we will still have roles to play. And I do believe that we will still have elections and that we will still have a chance to save this.
Mm-hmm.
And when Democrats take back power, and I do believe we will, I do believe that what the Trump administration is doing is so unpopular that as long as our National Democratic Party doesn't mess it up by being too cowardly,
mm-hmm.
that Democrats are likely to have some successes in the next couple of elections. When we get back power, we need to recognize the crisis that we just survived.
Right.
And fix some of the systems, and we need to prioritize structural reform.
Mm-hmm.
We will not be able to, you know, Markey has this great reputation for his environmental mm-hmm. Leadership.
Sure.
Well deserved.
Yep.
The reality of where we are now is if Markey wrote his dream environmental reform package and it just passed, everyone, we all agreed, Markey, write it, we're going to pass it, the Supreme Court would just throw it out instantly. Mm-hmm. It has no chance of becoming law.
Right.
If Democrats don't acknowledge that reality and talk plainly about that reality, we're telling fairy tales.
Yeah.
We have to start by recognizing the reality, that which is, we have to fix the Supreme Court,
mm-hmm.
Probably by expanding it. We have to get rid of the filibuster, if the Republicans haven't done it first, so that we can pass more bills. We have to engage in some of these structural reform efforts so that we can pass these other things that we've been talking about and promising for years.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't start with fixing some of the structures of voting, of our democracy, if we don't pass voting rights, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, which we almost passed under Biden but failed to.
Very close, yeah.
If we had passed that and the Freedom to Vote Act, mm-hmm. along with it, then this redistricting fight that we're in right now with Texas and California,
sure.
wouldn't be allowed.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be taking steps to prevent some of these problems. Mm-hmm. And without recognizing the systems that are blocking progress,
right.
how are we going to make right. progress?
Yeah.
Another example that I use often is the student loan forgiveness,
sure.
that Biden tried to enact. I would love to get into a debate with you about whether his student loan the first student loan forgiveness plan that he put forward was good policy or bad policy. I've had some very interesting conversations with people about that,
mm-hmm.
the first, back when it was
sure.
being discussed before yeah. he enacted it.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting idea. I don't think it'll surprise voters who've heard me already just this last 20 minutes or whatever,
yep.
that I was supportive of it. I don't think people will be surprised by that, but I think you can have a really interesting policy debate on that. But separate the policy debate for a second. Joe Biden had the authority to do it. Congress gave him the authority to do it. And the Supreme Court invented out of whole cloth a brand new legal argument to throw it out. That's not how the system's supposed to work.
Right.
I want to get back to a place where the policy argument matters.
Sure.
And not the debate about the structure of the United States and what can we get past the Supreme Court or what can we get past a filibuster.
Mm-hmm.
It's a silly place to be in.
Yeah. The rule of law certainly seems to have clearly taken a different turn than many people would have liked. The current administration seems to not care much for the rule of law unless it's for themselves, clearly.
Yeah.
Hence the creative languages here, the ignoring the actions required there, the delays. We could go on forever. We don't need to. That's not the point. I think you've made the point. Getting back, I'm anticipating, assuming things did happen, you'd also be faced with how much time do you prioritize kind of reconstructing what was done to undo it versus truly, preventing the next time for it to happen again. There might be at least some discussion,
yeah.
which should at least be a valid policy choice as
yeah.
well.
I think that preventing something like this from happening again is part of that
mm-hmm.
structural reform that we have to enact.
Right.
And I think that some of that is included in things like voting rights reform and
mm-hmm.
campaign finance reform.
Sure.
I think it was about 40% of the Trump campaign was paid for by a single individual. Money in politics matters a lot, and it, does he still win without, if he's running with 60% less money? Mm-hmm. It's a fair question. You know, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. We don't live in that counterfactual.
Right.
But addressing some of the campaign finance laws, which is already part of the core structural reform elements that I'm running on, and voting rights protections, I think that those do already take steps to address preventing this. I think another important step to preventing something like this from happening again mm-hmm. is holding people accountable. You know, we've got, it's easy to forget, but Trump shouldn't have been eligible for the ballot. He was an insurrectionist.
Right.
He the 14th Amendment is pretty clear mm-hmm. on his eligibility. Some states even saw that and tried to keep him off the ballot. This highly partisan Supreme Court
chose otherwise.
And their argument for doing such was circular. The Supreme Court's argument for leaving him on the ballot was that he wasn't impeached, and the Republicans who voted against impeachment the second time, their argument for not impeaching was, this isn't a question for us. Everyone was trying to pass the ball back and forth and not be stuck making the final decision.
Right.
And you know, that's the most obvious example, but very few people will push back on the claim that the United States, as a general rule over the last 50 plus years, probably a heck of a lot longer, doesn't do a great job of holding people accountable for violating the law.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big difference between prosecuting your opponents because they're your opponents right. and prosecuting people for obvious violations of the law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Elon Musk getting on stage and offering what pretty clearly appeared to be bribes for people voting mm-hmm. for the Wisconsin Supreme Court, that seems to be a pretty clear violation of the law, and he's not being held accountable.
Right.
We've got to holding people accountable for their actual crimes is going to be an important step in moving on from this, because right now you have this system where anyone working for government, anyone especially associated with the administration, think about their incentive structure.
Mm-hmm.
Trump and their bosses is pushing them to break the law all the time in mm-hmm. big ways and small.
Sure.
If they push back, best case, they're fired. Worst case, they're fired with a Truth Social post that ends up in death threats.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can just do what Trump is asking, break the law, mm-hmm. and based on the last 50 years of American history, probably not face any consequences.
Right.
Part of why things have gotten so bad
mm-hmm.
is because we've allowed people to violate the law while they work in government and get off scot-free.
Yeah.
And we need to make it crystal clear that that's not going to happen. You know, after Musk left office in May, there were a few Democrats, not many, but a few, who said, we're going to hold Elon Musk accountable. But no one was specific. No one said what they were going to do mm-hmm. to hold Elon Musk accountable.
Right.
No one's... Senator Warren came up with a list of things that looked like crimes, but there was no reference to she's going to use her power of office to refer these crimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Warren did better. That's I'm mentioning her because she did better than the rest of the Democratic Party.
Right.
Markey didn't come out with a list at all. Markey mm-hmm. didn't say we're going to hold him accountable. If we don't hold people accountable, then how are we going to move on? We're setting the clear precedent that everything that's happened over the last from January to now, and then over the next couple of months to years is okay.
Right.
So I think that's the first thing that we have to be crystal clear on is this isn't about political retribution. This isn't going to be led by Democrats, but there will be efforts to hold people who committed crimes accountable. And I think that's one of the first things that we're going to have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't do that, what's the incentive structure that we're laying?
Yeah.
What message are we sending?
Right. And I assume that, I shouldn't assume, I should always ask, of course. But your hope is that there's enough of the dismay, concern, anything in those realms with dissatisfaction with both Democrats and Republicans that something needs to be done by changing the language, by holding accountable, by restoring some of the democratic processes that were there and were working in order to get us beyond in a future that is more bright than currently is seen. So you're trying to tap into the disaffected, the discouraged, clearly amongst the Democrats, because you're in the Democratic Party going for the challenge for Markey, but by the same token, you're also hoping that others will say, I want that message too. That may help us because, respectfully, there are some Republicans, I would assume, who aren't happy with the way the process is going either.
Correct. Yes. I do think that while I am personally, politically to the left, whatever label you want to put on it, I do think that the frustration, the desire for change, the desire for someone who recognizes this moment for what it is, and also just the desire for someone who understands what it's like to be a person out there.
Mm-hmm.
I have lived in Massachusetts these last several years.
Mm-hmm.
Full time, and I tell the story sometimes about I learned how to cut my kids' hair to save a few hundred dollars on haircuts every year.
Sure.
Because a couple hundred dollars a year for haircuts makes a difference to my family.
Yeah.
I don't know how true that's going to be for most people in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
I was dealing with a contractor for something, and he found out that I was running, and his response, I don't think he agrees with me on most political issues, but his reaction was, normal guy running for Senate? I love that. And I do think that there's some appetite for that. But back to your question, I want to get back to a place where moderates and liberals and progressives and conservatives can debate politics.
Yes.
And we are not in that place right now.
No.
And I think that at least a lot of the independents in Massachusetts, which are the majority,
right,
not the plurality, the majority of voters in Massachusetts are not registered to either party.
Right.
And I think a lot of those people see that and respect that and know that. They know that our government isn't working and isn't making enough progress on problems. And the fact that I'm running on a platform of saying, hey, you and I might not agree on everything politically, but my first priority is to get back to a place where we can have those debates.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can debate next time around, once we've fixed those problems, whether you agree with me enough to keep me there or to put someone else in there or whatever. but I think that that is something that does carry appeal to people who won't agree with me on every issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's absolutely true. And I think it's necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, because even in the local political world that I deal with, yeah, the people are either for or against, and if they hear one thing or that thing, they don't want to do anything else. And it's like, well, I understand all politics is local. We're not even doing party politics here. This is just neighbors, and some have volunteered for certain committees. Some have volunteered for other committees. The town is providing our services. We need to agree as to what those should be, mm-hmm. because that clearly has a financial impact on our incomes, i.e. taxes and service fees and whatever else comes up. But if we can't even have that civil conversation, how are we going to get beyond the issues we have in order to get to a better place?
Yeah.
So to that extent, absolutely, putting party politics aside, the democratic process needs to get restored truly to be a democratic process.
Yeah. And I think that there are structural reforms that can decrease the incentive towards partisanship and extremism. You know, it won't, you know, it's not going to fix the Twitter algorithm. It's not going to fix the Instagram algorithm. But Fox and Sinclair, who owns most of the local news stations around the country,
right?
Those are corporations that a lot of their programming decisions are in part guided by keeping political power. And so if we have an electoral system that promotes a party running to the extreme, then it is in the benefit of those companies to push their viewers towards that extreme.
Absolutely.
If you can reform the voting systems in such a way as to make it so that we are no longer institutionally incentivizing extremism, then I think you will see from some of those large-scale corporations some reaction. And you will see from politicians some reaction. You know, I don't think it's a coincidence that if you look at scorecards of, you know, who are the most moderate members of the Senate, many of the people in the middle come from states that have what a normal person would describe as an atypical voting system. You have Alaska, you have Georgia, you have Maine, you have these states where you have the sort of nonpartisan or jungle primary, or you have ranked choice voting. You have a system that isn't this what Massachusetts has, what most states have, of a single party primary, winner of the primary advances to the next round.
Right. The horse race.
Yeah. That system, it incentivizes politicians to move towards the flank. Because unless you are in a true swing district, of which there are very few, the biggest threat to your job is someone running to your flank. But these alternate systems, and we've got a couple of different examples of different things that have worked. And it's not 100% of the time. You know, the governor of Georgia was not particularly moderate. It's not going to work 100% of the time. But I don't think it's a coincidence that you end up with more moderate senators, generally speaking, from these states when you have a different system of voting. You know, these are choices that we are making as a government that are incentivizing our representatives to govern in a more partisan way, to campaign in a more partisan way. It's incentivizing corporations to respond because they, you know, Fox is in the business of keeping Republicans in power.
Right.
If the best way for Fox to keep Republicans in power stops being push everyone to the extreme, they'll adapt. Yeah, that's not going to fix Twitter. But this isn't a panacea, but there are things that we can do that will, on a federal structural level, that will at least turn the tide. Generally speaking, throughout my conscious life, politics has just gotten more and more extreme and hostile.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, the Citizens United was really the kind of the tipping point for me. There may have been earlier ones, but that certainly fostered the corporate dollar flow into
a huge things that were already in motion got worse.
Correct. Because in the years ago, there's much talk of in multiple sources of party members staying in D.C., playing softball, having family events, having conversations as well on the golf course, et cetera, around policy discussions. And it was much easier to at least work the aisles. And then at some point in time, because the force of the money situation, they ended up staying at home because that dollar just fed itself in a downward slope. And we're still headed in that downward slope, according to some aspects of it, which is what you're trying to break us away from.
There are things that we can do to turn the tide on some of these issues, but we have to try.
Sure.
We have to notice that they're a problem. We have to be willing to talk about them and take them on.
Yeah.
And I think that you have to have someone who is willing to come in and try anything. And I think that with Markey and with a lot of the more established members of Congress, there's a belief that they've been there long enough to know what's possible and what's not, and what works and what doesn't. And there's a stagnation.
Yeah.
And that's, that is normal. Like that's a normal human reaction. On like a empathetic level, I don't fault them for it, but I would like that to change when I'm thinking about what I want for the next 6 years from my leadership.
Sure. Yeah. So I think this was a good set of, and I'll call it an intro to your campaign, because clearly this is early in. Yeah. You've still got some months to go. And as the campaign continues, I anticipate we'd have you back to continue to explore the conversations and how are you going to do this. And hopefully you will be able to raise some things along the way, and maybe Senator Markey will change some things along the way, which is still good.
Sounds great. Sounds legitimately wonderful.
Yes. Thank you for taking time to do this. Is there anything else you want to close with before we...
I like to talk about the pink.
The pink?
Yeah.
On the label. Your logo sign.
Yeah. My campaign is using pink.
For a reason.
Yeah. When I was putting the campaign together, being my older child, his favorite color is pink. And when I was putting the campaign together, he was getting picked on at school for liking the color pink.
Oh.
And in many ways, this campaign is about standing up to bullies.
Mm-hmm.
And what better way to support my kid and have a constant reminder of why I'm doing this and have my kids visually with me all the time than to make pink the primary color of the campaign. So my signs are pink, my business card is pink, and
the radio listeners can't see it, but your tie has pink shades.
Yes.
So you're consistent with the message to that extent. Absolutely.
Yes. Anytime I'm doing something campaign related, I wear pink. And it's also a nice visual cue to me when I'm not doing something with the campaign, I don't wear pink. Like
right.
when I'm
right.
just doing dinner with the family,
normal family stuff.
Try to take the pink off.
Kind of separation. Yes. You do need times away in order to get reinforced to come back into the charge.
Yeah. So I like to talk about that, but
no, thank you. That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you for doing this. Thank you for stopping by. Thank you for talking about pink. That, I think, added it to it considerably. And thank you, listeners, for listening. Stay tuned. I'm sure we'll have Alex back at least once
again. Thanks
for having
me. Yeah,
sure.
This was great. It was great to talk to you.
Excellent. Thank you. And quick reminder to listeners, we do this because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.